You're listening to Rosie on the House.
Good morning, Arizona homeowners. Why don't you come on around back here and get ready to dive into the garden and get that good old earth under your fingernails and cultivate and harvest our hard work that we've been doing all year long. Well, today, most of the work's got to hand it to the trees.
Yeah,
give them a little water, give them a little fertilizer. They're doing most of the work on today's topic. We're in the farm with Urban Farmer, Farmer Greg of the Urban Farm, along with Kari Spencer, author of City Farming, and we're talking apple and peach harvest. Now, somebody new to Arizona, they're thinking...
apples in Arizona?
Yeah. Now, we're not talking McIntosh.
Nope.
Or Washington. What kind of apples are we harvesting today?
So there's really only two kinds of apples that do really well here, the Anna and the Dorset Golden. And the kicker for those particular apples is they're low chill, which means they don't need a whole lot of cool, and they ripen early in the season. So they're coming ripe. I mean, I see some from your...
Those are from the Whitman Plantation. There. We have six Annas.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
And these are what the horses haven't eaten yet.
Right.
So as we're thinning our apples, that's how we do it. We take all the little, you get a nice big cluster of six or seven, you take two or three out, and you put them in your bag, and as you're feeding, you just give each horse a handful, and
nice. It's
like candy to them.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So, excuse me, the Anna and the Dorset Golden, they ripen early enough. All of the rest of the apples will ripen in August, September, October, and the problem is that they just cook on the trees in the summertime. So that's one of the keys to success for stone fruit, so that's anything with a pit in the middle of it, and apples here in the desert, is you want to plant trees that ripen before about July 10th.
Now, if you wanted one of those later ripening ones, could you make a little cluster and plant this one in the middle so it's shaded and protected, or it's still just when it's 112, it's 112.
Exactly.
It's gonna cook.
Exactly.
Shade or no shade.
And you can. My friend Jack out in Tempe, she's got a gala growing, and she's gotten a few apples off of them. So, you can plant these other apple trees, and you can get a few apples. But how many apples are coming in on your Anna apple tree?
Oh, we can't keep up. That's why I brought this whole bag here.
Mind-blowing.
We picked twice that off yesterday, and it doesn't even look like we've started picking.
Right, exactly.
And when you said she's got a few on that, well, how much water? What's your water-to-harvest ratio
right
there?
Well, you and I are lucky. We've got flood water, right?
Well, we have a well.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
so exactly.
We've got a private well that we operate off
of. And given you brought it up, I get this question a lot. It's like, excuse me, why are you proposing that people grow fruit trees in the desert? We're water shorted here. Well, my answer to that is there's 4.4 million people that live in the Phoenix metropolitan area, and we all have to eat. So we either need to ship in an apple from Peru or, Washington State, or we can grow it here. There's an environmental cost to either one of them. So
definitely.
And if you're, how does your peaches and apples taste coming off of your tree? They're mind blowing, aren't they?
Really good.
Yeah, that's mind blowing how they taste. Plus, when you're harvesting them ripe, the fruit is actually better for you. It's in season, and I could go on. I could go on for weeks. But today we're
so
here
that's
to
apple.
Talk.
What about peaches?
Peaches. Same story. Harvest before July 11th. And there are about a dozen peaches, three or four apricots, half a dozen plums that all do really well here. Nectarines, we'll take those off the table because they're highly susceptible to something called a thrip. And thrip damage makes unedible fruit. So just put a peach in. But those are a couple. The apples and the peaches and stone fruits, those are great to preserve. But there's also mulberries. And, people will say to me, oh, my God, mulberries. We can't plant it's not legal to plant mulberries here. Well, it is to plant female mulberries. There's male mulberries and female mulberries. The males produce the pollen. The females produce an amazing fruit on the Pakistani and dwarf black mulberries. They're absolutely wonderful. And we're at the end of the season for those now.
Now, and make great shade trees as well.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the stone fruits are... citrus, they're not really designed and shouldn't be trimmed up you know, you got all that sunburnt exposure to the bark by opening
it up. Well, you want
to
keep, you know, from an urban orcharding perspective, you want to keep the trees small anyway so you can pick them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're easier to manage.
This tree that this one's off of is now 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm at the point I can't reach the top by hand anymore.
Right. Well, so those are apples. And I've got a, you know, I've got a 20-foot tall apple tree in the backyard at the urban farm. I'm growing it that way on purpose. But most of the rest of the time, I encourage people to keep their fruit trees small. But we're not here to talk about fruit trees.
Mulberry is your... is your shade and fruit.
Exactly. But we're not here to talk about the fruit trees themselves. We're here to talk about
what
the harvest and what to do with it. And I've got my good friend here, Kari Spencer, to talk about, you know, what do we do with this amazing bounty that's coming off of our trees?
Yeah. And if you've got a number of trees like you have, Romy, and like you have, Greg, you got to do something with it.
Oh, yeah.
You'll have so much that you can't possibly just sit down and eat it all. You'll be sick of it, right? So why not preserve it? And then around Christmas time, you've still got some of that good fruit to eat when it's not in season anymore. It's on your pantry shelf.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and that's the thing about fruit trees. You have to prepare for that process because – you know, you could get 200 pounds of apples off of a tree. What do you do with 200 pounds of apples all at once or, you know, 100 pounds of peaches? You've got to set yourself up for success, right?
Yes, that is right. You got to pre-plan that, too, a little bit.
So what does that look like?
Well, we can do a number of things to actually preserve the fruit, but even taking it a step further back, when you plant something, start thinking about, what am I going to do with this harvest right then?
Right.
And think about when it's going to be coming into season. Start getting your supplies together. Start getting your recipes together so that when it comes, you're not taken by surprise and have things that just go bad because you're scrambling now to know what to do. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you plan to go on vacation when your peaches came ripe. You know, that's not an ideal scenario for sure.
Right. Well, you know what? I actually every year plan my vacations around my harvest. So we don't leave town until middle of July because I know that I'm going to be harvesting all kinds of stuff in May, June, and early July.
That's right. So you get it all harvested, preserved, and then you can go on vacation and feel great because you've got all this stuff at home that you
And what's better on a vacation than a picnic with your own homemade canned peaches?
Yeah, nothing's better than that, especially when you're riding in the car and you want to eat something.
Yeah.
You don't have to pull through the drive-thru. You got it right there. And you don't have to refrigerate it if it's been canned.
Yeah.
Right?
So let's talk about canning.
Well, there's two types of canning. There's the water bath canning, and there's pressure canning. Water bath canning is probably the most common way that people preserve foods because it's super easy to
Especially
do.
Especially when you got a 100-quart crawfish cooker, and I can fit 24 cans in that water bath in one time.
Nice.
We can go through some cans now.
Now, I want to clarify something. When we say can, we don't actually mean putting them in can.
No, it's large mouth mason jars.
Yeah, mason jars. So. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, yeah. So we do water bath canning, which simply means you pack the food into the jars and then you heat it to boiling. You put it in your canner and heat that water up to boiling and let it boil. And it, you know, that helps to get the air out of the jar and it kills germs that could grow in that jar. And then once the process is completely done, you can take the jars out, let them cool, put them in your pantry. You don't need to refrigerate them at that point. And we do water bath canning for high acid type foods. So any type of food that is high in acid, we can easily water bath can. All right. So
how do I know what's high in acid?
Well, a lot of fruits are high in acid, including tomatoes, which are a fruit.
Oh, yes, they are.
Yeah. But we also can add some acid to our recipes, add some lemon juice, some citric acid to help bring up that acid level. If you want to know which fruits and vegetables would be appropriate for water bath canning, I would say go out to the National Center for Home Food Preservation website at nchfp.uga.edu. And that website will give you all kinds of information about how to do water bath canning safely and also deliciously.
Yeah. So what's the difference between that and pressure canning? Because that's actually what I do. I pressure can it just because.
Well, for anything that's not high acid, like if I want to preserve a corn harvest so that I have jars of corn sitting on my shelf, mm-hmm. that is a low acid food. And it is dangerous to actually water bath can low acid foods because pathogens can grow in there that will make you sick. So instead of water bath canning, we can pressure can them using a special pressure canner that heats and pressurizes the food to such high temperatures that really nothing harmful can grow in there. And that's the only way to do low acid mm-hmm. foods.
But it's okay to, if you have a pressure canner, just pressure can everything, right?
Sure. Could pressure can, I pressure can even meat sometimes, chicken. So, yeah, you can pressure can a lot of different things.
So where's your best spot source for mason jars and lids and wide mouth versus small mouth? And where do you get your pressure cooker? Do you have your Lehman's catalog? You have a place local you buy from?
Well, that's one of the really great reasons to start thinking about canning before it's actually time to can, because if you are looking for a canner at the last minute, you're going to pay top dollar for it.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Whereas if you start thinking about this some months in advance, you can start looking on Amazon for sales, for instance. You can start looking on Craigslist and other websites where people sell things.
Yeah,
you can start looking for a friend that maybe you could borrow from, just to try it out and see if you like doing it to begin with.
That's you know, that's a big one, because a pressure canner is, what, $150?
They can be.
Yeah. And if you have one that you can, you know, borrow from a friend.
Or if you've got a neighbor that does canning, there's plenty of, and you don't have a garden, or you're hearing this and you're like, oh, man, I'd love to teach my kids that. I remember doing that with grandma. Well, by the time you plant a tree, you're like 5 years out from a good canning of your own. Well, there's plenty of big co-ops and farmers markets. You could go get, you know, a couple sacks of fresh produce, and you know, if your neighbor's got the canner, you know, hey, I'll bring the fruit. We're gonna use your canner.
Yeah, there you go.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And on the jars, interestingly enough, the true value in Ace Hardware's carry jars.